The next talk, Getting Started with Threat Modeling, is by Arne Patmos. Arne's travels in the field of information security have crossed areas ranging from usable security to sidechain analysis. He has also taught the various branches that make up security engineering. Currently, Arne's main interest is how the application of risk management and threat modeling can lead into design, development, and deployment of more secure systems.
Welcome to the introductory training on threat modeling for development teams. The goal of this training is to teach you how to design more secure products. And the idea is that you have a little voice in your head telling you what could possibly go wrong, as well as a concrete methodological approach to walk through such issues, as well as how to address problems. Now, before we go into the content of this training, I'd strongly recommend that you grab a pen and some paper, as taking notes on paper really helps in knowledge retention, and also because we'll be working through various practical exercises. Now, what we're going to look at is first some underlying fundamental principles behind threat modeling. We'll go into some of the practical aspects. Look at various worked examples, have you do some exercises, and we'll close with some recommended but optional homework exercises. Let's start by looking at some of the fundamental principles behind threat modeling. Now, when talking about threat modeling and specifically the concept of threats, many people think of adversaries or attackers or people that might want to harm us. And while this is a valid perspective, when talking about threat modeling, we are really talking about systems. We focus on systems and the question of what could possibly go wrong with those systems. Now, this is in line with the threat modeling manifesto, which asks us to analyze representations of systems to highlight concerns about security and privacy characteristics. Before we go into this in more detail, let's first look back at some history. Even though this history is fuzzy, it can teach us many things. Let's have a look at the concept of information security, which is what cybersecurity used to be called. Now, this term information, what do we mean by this? When talking about information, we talk about data, data, and data. Specifically, data addressed, data in motion, and data in use. Or, in other words, the storage, transmission, and processing of data. Now, one way of representing data is through so-called data flow diagrams. And this is one of the earliest, if not the earliest, data flow diagram from 1975. And it represents a simple computer program. The arrows represent data flowing from one computation to another computation. And the circles represent processing of data. This is a data flow diagram from 3 years later in 1978, which besides circles as data processing, arrows as data transfer, also has lines which represent data storage, as well as a rectangle to represent external entities interacting with a system. Now, the syntax is still mostly used today. Here we see a data flow diagram that is more security centered from 2014, which still has these rectangles for external entities, arrows for data flows, and the two parallel horizontal lines to represent data being stored, as well as the rounded rectangles to represent data processing. Now, the only real extension since the 1970s for security is this, are these dotted lines or these dotted rectangles. And they represent trust boundaries or trust zones that indicate which part of a system rely on one another, or in other words, which part of the system trust other parts. So knowing what we mean by information, let's have a look at the concept of security. When talking about security, we really talk about the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of information, and the use of authentication, authorization, and accountability controls to ensure that. Here, confidentiality refers to ensuring that only legitimate entities can read certain information. Integrity means that only authorized parties can change information, and availability means that authorized entities can have access to information or services. By authentication, we mean ensuring that someone is who they claim to be, so checking someone's identity. Authorization refers to checking the access, the intended level of access of someone, and accountability refers to ensuring that we have an audit trail, or in other words, that logging is in place. Now, as security is a negative non-functional requirement or a negative quality attribute, we cannot show that we have achieved any of these six goals. Instead, what we do is looking for any of these types of problems, so the inverse of the goals that we just saw. So we look for potential disclosure of information to attackers. We look for information being tampered or service being denied, possible impersonation by attackers, or attackers running code or executing other actions, or attackers being able to say, it wasn't me. Now, one way of remembering these six general types of threats or things that can go wrong is the STRIDE mnemonic, which was first described at Microsoft at the end of the 90s. And it stands for spoofing, tampering, repudiation, information disclosure, denial of service, and elevation of privilege. And so these are really very high-level types or categories of threats. There's several other approaches to look at more details, types of things that can go wrong. So on the left, we see an attack tree or a threat tree, where the root node represents the general type of threats, so the attacker's goal, and the branches and leaves, they represent the different attack steps or sub-threats. Now, these threat trees can be quite complex to construct, and also they can become quite convoluted. Another way of looking at this, looking at the different attack steps, is through a so-called attack graph, which you see on the right, where all the different ways or paths through a system, so the different attack steps, are diagrammed. And this can really help to identify the kind of shortest or easiest path for an attacker to go from an entry point, so from a starting position, to one of the assets that an attacker is after. So now that we know what we mean by information and what we mean by security, let's combine these two things. So when talking about information security, we really talk about creating a representation of a system, so in this case, a graphical model, a graphic diagram, and thinking about the different things that can go wrong with that system. Here we see one of the earliest example of such a threat model from the end of the 60s. And what we see here is a time-sharing system, and a lot of the threats identified, they are still relevant today. Now let's have a look at some of the some related concepts. So when talking about a system, it's important to realize that this system is defined on the basis of the system boundary that we deem relevant for a certain analysis. And a system is always embedded within a certain context, within an environment with its associated environmental assumptions. Also, this system has on the system boundary, there is certain interfaces or entry points to that system, which connect the system to the rest of the environment. Additionally, there's certain assets or things of value contained within the system. So let's look at an example. Here we see an office environment where on the left we see various entry points such as windows, doors, even stairs to a parking garage, and things such as plumbing, for example. Now on the right, what we see is the relevant assets or things of value, such as soft drinks or even a fax machine. Now, in this example, there we have only specified the external interfaces, and we have identified what we want to protect. But there's still many different options as to how this system is architected. So when looking at threat modeling and when looking at risk assessment, what we're interested in is looking at such different architecture, different ways of structuring a system, and identifying which architectures lead to the lowest residual risk at the lowest cost. There's different ways of doing this, but the general approach is to first specify a certain system architecture, to go through this architecture, identifying various threats and possible attacks, and then on the basis of component risks, looking at the and specific vulnerabilities to really prioritize these and to use that to shortlist and identify specific countermeasures. And if this leads to a new system architecture, to then go through this process again until the residual risk is acceptably low. Now, the original grandfathers of threat modeling at Microsoft, what they once said is that if they could only do one thing, they would do threat modeling every single day of the week. So take half a minute to think about why Howard and Lipner might have said this, and also think about the position of threat modeling within the development lifecycle of a system. So the main reason is related to cost, and specifically the cause to fix problems at specific points within the development lifecycle. So although a lot of these figures get quoted without reference, this is one of the original references, one of the original some original data around how much it costs to fix problems at requirements, design, coding, development, testing, or operations time. And this is not a linear, but a logarithmic scale. So fixing problems once a system is already out in the field is orders of magnitude more expensive than fixing issues at design time. So, and as threat modeling allows us to analyze potential security issues in an architecture, problems can already be identified during the design and not so during the design phase, so before even a single line of code may be written. So we can position threat modeling within the broader development lifecycle after we have an initial design. We can then review the architecture through threat modeling, and that can then lead to, for example, redesigns, but it can also lead to a specific risk-based implementation level analysis or code review. It can also lead to identifying where we want to focus penetration testing activities. And so both code review and pen testing can then feed back into our threat modeling activities for things that we've overlooked, as well as ideally limited redesign. So we've looked at what threat modeling is, and also why threat modeling is useful. So let's now look at some of the practical aspects of threat modeling and specific ways of doing threat modeling. Now, one big problem when threat modeling is that there are many, many, many different approaches. So here, for example, we see a GitHub repo with around 20 plus different methodologies. Now, these can generally be structured from a very kind of rigid checklist-based approaches to completely unstructured kind of whiteboarding sessions. Now, what the approach that we've chosen is to take a semi-structured approach. So really not going for a just checklists, and also not going for a complete freeform approach. Now, in threat modeling, it makes sense to look at existing ways of doing things and to not reinvent the wheel. So let's have a look at a framework for structuring existing approaches. And specifically, we'll do this by looking at kind of six general aspects that play a role in threat modeling. And we'll walk through these one by one. These aspects being the architecture of the system, the important elements, specific ways an attacker can access the system, things that can go wrong, broader scenarios, as well as things that we can do about those. Now, when talking about the architecture of a system, there's many ways of representing that architecture, but generally we focus on the data flow within the system using data flow diagrams, and also look at the relevant trust zones within the system. So we've looked at some examples of data flow diagrams and trust zones. So this is really one of the main approaches and also the recommended way of doing things. Then, if we have a view of the structure of the system, we can then think of where within the system our crown jewels or key assets are located. So these are really what the attacker targets and what we value. And there's different ways of identifying these, but it makes sense to kind of link these key assets to what is most important to the business and to not identify every element as important, because if everything's important, then nothing is. So having identified crown jewels, another important aspect is thinking about ways in which an attacker can interact with the system. So these are our external interfaces, and these are strongly related to the system boundary that we've identified and also the assumptions that we make about the system. And these entry points, they can also be thought of as where within our system we position the attacker. So knowing the architecture, key assets, and entry points, we can think of the threat events or hypothetical exploits or potential vulnerabilities. And here, this is really where an approach like Stride comes in, or more structured methods such as attack libraries. Now, in order to know what threats we really want to address, in order to prioritize these, one way is to think about attack paths that go from entry points to key assets. Because if there is a path from an entry point to key assets made up of one or more threats, then we really want to focus on the attacks or attack scenarios that are the easiest for an attacker to execute. So once we know what things we want to focus on first, so what potential attacks we want to mitigate first, we can start thinking about both reducing, so countermeasures to reduce the likelihood of something bad happening, as well as ways of mitigating the impacts. And especially this second thing, so impact mitigation, whether that's through early detection or things like backups, this is often forgotten, and many countermeasures instead focus on likelihood reduction. Now, these six aspects, they are not linear, and they can really be walked through in any order. And they're also like, you also, there's no, this is not like a one-time thing, but something to go through multiple times. Additionally, underlying these six aspects, there's various assumptions that tie them together, such as around the environment, around relevant attacker capabilities, etc. And ways of feeding these assumptions, as well as the other aspects, it's relevant to look at the business model or threat intelligence around attackers, the preferred system scope for analysis, and things like the use cases supported by the system. Additionally, both these assumptions identified throughout the a threat modeling workshop or threat modeling engagement, these are useful output, for example, for making choices during quality gates for for constructing test plans, identifying which areas of a system require the greatest effort with respect to working off security debts. And so output from a threat modeling workshop can also be useful for knowing or for choosing where to place sensors for monitoring activities. So summarizing this, there are six relevant facets to focus on. So a sketch of the architecture, identification of crown jewels, looking at all the relevant interfaces, thinking of stuff that can go wrong, and broader scenarios built up of specific attack steps, and then picking countermeasures to both reduce likelihood and impact of attacks. And tying all of this together are various critical assumptions around attackers, business processes, users, system, the system boundary, and the environment. And all of this is both fed by as well as feeds into various other activities. Now, this is just one framework, and really this can be modified in many different ways. So really think about your own context, think about what is useful within that context, and what steps in what so what kind of process makes sense for you, and really evolve it on the basis of real world experience. Because what many people forget is that threat modeling and threat modeling methods, that they are tools, and these tools, they have a specific purpose, which is helping you to find problems and prioritizing what you do about those problems. So having looked at the theory behind threat modeling, and having looked at a general framework for threat modeling, let's have a look at some work examples. So here we see a simple IT system with a browser, a web server, and a backend. So in order to think about what could possibly go wrong, we can apply the stride mnemonic. We can think of, for example, the HTTP data flow, how both tampering and information disclosure is possible. How the, for example, in the connection to the database server, how we have, in the connection to the web server, how we can have potential spoofing from the browser. Or look at, say, payroll data, both tampering and information disclosure is possible. So on this basis, we can then think of potential countermeasures. Just as for tampering and information disclosure on the HTTP data flow, we can apply SSL/TLS. Or for the LDAP flow, use IPsec to ensure both confidentiality and integrity. For the audit data and the web pages, things like X control lists might be useful, countermeasures, etc. So this is a very simple data flow diagram. We can also extend this, both looking at the both kind of horizontally and vertically, by, for the vertical perspective, looking at different layers. So we can sketch a context diagram that identifies the external entities interacting with our system. Then we can identify a level zero diagram that provides some more detail. And then really looking into which part of the system we think are the parts of the system that we think are most interesting, that pose the highest risk, and to then kind of look at this as a Matroska doll, really diving into additional detail and really sketching the data flows happening at different levels. So for example, here we have a simple web application where the external entities are shown. So we have a customer, anonymous user, and the administrator. Now our level zero system shows this in some more detail, both the web app itself, as well as various other components that do further processing, such as the ordering component 4.7. In order to know what's going on there, we can zoom in and look at the relevant data flows. So here we have a lower level data flow diagram that really zooms in to what's happening within the ordering component. And we can then use such a lower level data flow diagram to explore specific spoofing, tampering, repudiation, information disclosure, denial of service, and elevation of privilege threats to each data flow and each process and each data store, as well as the different external entities. Now, of course, at a certain point, we need to kind of stop digging. So at some point, we start making assumptions and we start treating system elements as black boxes. So in this case, the ASP.NET and the .NET framework, we treat these as black boxes and we make certain security assumptions about them, as well as the web server, TCP IP stack, network driver, etc. So we really have a specific scope for our threat model, as well as certain security assumptions. Now, we can also kind of scale out or look at a kind of broader, take a broader perspective for a kind of horizontal level, looking at different attack paths. So here again, we have a simple data flow diagram of a web application, application server, SQL database, etc. And so the next step is identifying trust boundaries, where we have the internet, a demilitarized zone, and the corporate network, which we can then use to identify threats. So things like spoofing the web application or tampering with a web application, things such as elevation of privilege, etc. Now, once we have applied Stride to all these elements, we can then think of specific attack paths through the system. So here we have an example of some of these attack paths. And whereas some of these are quite short, others are much longer. And we can use this depending, of course, on the expected work factor or efforts on the part of the attacker. We can then use this to prioritize our countermeasure selection. Now, let's look at a integrated example. Here we're looking at smart mobility or kind of connected vehicles. And what we see here is really the broad system. So looking at both back-end services such as satellite communication, as well as different entities, both cars, buses, but also things like the mobile communication, so telecommunications, etc. Fleet management systems, Wi-Fi connections, information around traffic, and specific obstructions. Now, suppose that looking at this broader system, that we then want to zoom in on a connected vehicle, and specifically one of these cars. Now, it makes sense to start with getting a perspective of the attack surface, so the different attack vectors into this system, into this connected vehicle. And many modern cars, they have quite a large attack surface. So ranging from very specific things such as the tire pressure monitor system, the in-car entertainment system, which is where, for example, connecting phone, CDs, etc., but also maybe Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, or even a connection to the backend over 3G, 4G, 5G, etc. Now, knowing the external interfaces, let's then have a look at the architecture of this car. And generally, we see a gateway, a shared CAN bus, which the different parts of this car use to communicate with one another. So this really gives an idea of the internal structure of the system that we're looking at. And we can use this to get a view of kind of the different parts and what can go wrong with those parts, and to then kind of map out different attack paths through the system. So let's have a look at a specific attack path. What we see here is the Jeep Cherokee from 2014. And one attack path that was possible and also exploitable was a connection over, so this car would be connected to the internet over the phone network, and it would have an actual public IP address. So an attacker could connect to this car, and this car was running an entertainment system, so a kind of heads-up display, this was running Linux, an old version of Linux, which had exploitable vulnerabilities, so an attacker would be able to take over this entertainment console. It would be able to then, kind of using this foothold, then reprogram certain chips, which after certain attack steps would lead to the attacker being able to inject messages into the CAN bus. So having access to the CAN bus would then allow things like steering left or right, acceleration, braking, etc. And of course, in essence, complete control over the vehicle. Now, further information and further detail on this worked example, have a look at the Car Hacker's Handbook, and specifically the first chapter. It's publicly available. And so have a look at these different data flow diagrams and how Stride and other kind of broad classes of attacks, how they're possible at these different elements. And it's really interesting to have a look at these at the different things that can go wrong. And of course, these are not just without looking at the structure of the system. It can be pretty hard to just think of threats out of thin air. So this is really a useful approach for thinking of what could possibly go wrong. Now that we've looked at the theory and the practice behind threat modeling, and now that we've seen some concrete applications, let's go through several exercises. So grab a pen, grab some paper. Now, what we see here is a high-level diagram of telemedicine. So on the right, we see a regional hospital. On the left, we see a private health practice. There's it with a general practitioner. In the regional hospital, we have a cardiologist. We also have specific health data being stored, a dedicated network for communication, as well as an encrypted channel over the internet. We have firewalls, and there is a connection to the patient. Now, the question to you is, take half a minute to think of what details you are missing in this data flow diagram. So really take some paper and write these down. So this diagram is missing a lot of detail. So things that would probably be interested in is, are things like what data is actually going over the network, what type of protocols. Would also be interested in how is a GP and a cardiologist, how are they actually, like kind of what commands, what data are they entering into the system? How is authentication and access control and auditing arranged? Also for the data crossing the internet, how is this even encrypted and how are these firewalls configured? What data is being recorded in the database? And looking at the patient, what is there only data coming from the patient? So is data only being read? Or is there also a flow towards the patient? And whether that's data or energy, this makes a lot of difference with respect to potential risks. Also, what kind of medical device is connected to the patient? What's running on there, as well as on these two computers? What software, what operating system? So really, there's a lot of details missing here that would be important for us to be able to threat model the system properly. Now, let's have a look at another example. Here we see a web browser connecting to a web server with some other software running on virtualized Linux on a physical host, as well as an admin connecting to this virtualized Linux instance for administration. So here, the same question, take half a minute to think about what details you think are missing here. So here again, there is a lot of additional detail that would be very useful when threat modeling. So here, thinking about kind of where is this host even stored, even though we're looking at a data flow diagram, these are things that are relevant to consider, but specifically focusing on the data, what kind of operating system is this virtualized Linux instance running on there? What hypervisor are we dealing with? Are there multiple instances running in parallel? And looking at kind of the trust zones or trust boundaries, can we make that more fine-grained? So even within kind of a virtualized instance, what parts of this system trust one another and what parts don't. Looking at the kind of external entities and the connections to the system, is it the case that we're only talking HTTP, or is there HTTPS being used? What kind of users are using this system? How is this administrator authenticating? What kind of commands are they sending? What part of the system are they connecting to? And what should they be able to control? Looking at the web server, what kind of web server is this? And what kind of use case are we talking about? So there's really a lot of unanswered questions here that should be detailed, that should be added to the diagram for us to be able to kind of engage in proper threat modeling. So here we have two data flow diagrams on the left and on the right. So take a couple of seconds for some first impressions. So what we see here on the left, this data flow diagram is most likely to be too simple. Right? Even though it's good to kind of draw only those elements or those facets of a system that are really salient to security analysis, this is the data flow diagram on the left probably has too little detail. Now, on the right, here, even though less is not necessarily more, more is also not necessarily more. Right? This is quite a convoluted diagram, and it can make sense to split these up into multiple diagrams, or to really have more of an overview diagram first, and to then dive into specific details in a lower level diagram. Let's look at another exercise. What we see here is a simple DFD of an integrity monitoring solution. So something like Tripwire that monitors the integrity of files and registry on a system. So here we have some host software that monitors the registry and the file system, and that is controlled by an administrative console, where an administrator can provide instructions and also view the integrity of the different systems under their control. So the question to you is take half a minute to apply STRIDE to identify at least three different kinds of threats. So threats are possible at many different points within the system. So thinking about tampering, this is possible at any of the data stores. So we want to protect against adversaries changing data within the registry, file system, configuration data, and around the database that tracks the integrity of files. Information disclosure is possible at any of the data flows and also at any of the data stores. On looking at the processes, this is so at a process we see that any of the standard threat classes is possible. So a process can spoof another process, There's potential tampering of the code running. There is repudiation of a process, so an attacker kind of being able to claim that certain actions did not take place. There's potential for information disclosure as data is being processed, as well as for overloading processes to cause a denial of service attack, and even elevation of privilege, for example, through a buffer overflow. Now, other potential for repudiation we see at the external entities. So an attacker being able to claim that they're someone else, or that they didn't take a certain action, and an attacker being able to spoof a legitimate administrator. Now, the one thing that stands out is that at the data flows, we see not just tampering, information disclosure, and denial of service, but we also see a potential repudiation threat. So the reason for this is that for an attacker to perform an attack on a system, they would not only have to change the registry and the file system, but they would also have to ensure that this data doesn't show up in the integrity files database, or that it would have to be able to change it afterwards. Here we have an exercise on kind of scoping. So we see the headquarters of the ACME organization, and we also see their network services building. We see a perimeter, a guard, a front gate, as well as their IT infrastructure. So here, take a couple of seconds to think about what you would focus on. So you can focus on many things, but from a data flow diagram perspective and a threat modeling perspective, we probably initially want to focus on this part, so the IT infrastructure and the data flowing through that infrastructure. So we really need to kind of remember that this is only part of the system, and that focusing on data flow is also just one aspect, but it does tend to be the thing to focus on first. So suppose that we have an architecture or a network infrastructure, and suppose that this is a diagram of that network infrastructure. Take half a minute to think about different problems within this network, as well as potential things that you could do to address those problems. So one of the major issues we see here is that the web servers, which we can assume are can be accessed from the internet, that they are on the same subnet as the office servers and the desktops. So ideally, we really want to apply some network segmentation between those, as well as between the different web servers, especially if they don't need to talk to one another. Additionally, we see both administrators and developers being on the same subnet, and those desktops being able to talk to each other. So that's also something to address, as well as their connection to the office servers. Now, on the router side, we see that there is no protocol filtering happening whatsoever. And it probably makes sense to rethink that, to think about and to kind of reduce the attack surface and to reduce the possibility for attackers to contact different parts of our network, to think of what protocols are really necessary. Here we see a real world case study of an attack on the Bank of Bangladesh. So again, here the same question. It's taken half a minute to think of what issues you see here, as well as ways to address them. So the major issue we see here, and the way to address that, is that there was a direct connection between the end user computer and the internet. Now we're talking about the SWIFT system for interbank payments, and ideally we don't want that connected directly to the internet. So we could give the end user a dedicated terminal for serving the internet, and to then have the all the kind of backend systems and the end user computer, the computer that the end user uses to kind of give payment commands, to have that be air gapped from the internet, or at least to not have a direct connection to the internet, but only to the SWIFT network. Additionally, within the customer network, it can make sense to have some additional segmentation through, for example, firewalling, as well as between the internet and this additional computer for the end user. Of course, there's also various potential threats around information disclosure and ways of addressing those through the use of cryptography. But really, the main focus and the main thing to address here is this direct connection to the internet and the use of segmentation to address that. Now, we've looked at different ways in which threat modeling can be applied to analyzing a system, so the structure of a system. But threat modeling can also be analyzed to look at the life cycle or the different stages used for building a piece of software or hardware. So what we see here are the different steps for building a piece of software, from the developer checking things into source control, a build environment, the relying on certain dependencies, that leading to packages which are distributed to a consumer. Now, take a couple of seconds to think about what are some security goals for this system. So the primary goals are ensuring the integrity of source code, as well as ensuring the integrity of the build process. Now, take a couple of seconds to think about where things can go wrong within this pipeline. Things can really go wrong pretty much anywhere, And the so the next question to you is take around half a minute to kind of to describe a couple of these threats in more detail. So what could go wrong is that an attacker might be able to submit unauthorized changes. It could even be that a developer is actually an inside threat. It could be that an attacker is able to compromise the repository hosting the source code. There might be a problem where there is that the source code is modified as it's being built. The build process itself, so the build server, could be compromised by an attacker. It could be that an attacker is able to upload modified packages or is able to replace certain dependencies. It could also be that an attacker is able to get access to the package repository where they're able to replace certain packages. And it could also be that an attacker is able to send or to convince a consumer to use different packages that have been backdoored. So let's have a look at a more complex exercise. So we've looked at the different steps that are relevant when threat modeling. And for this exercise, you're encouraged to think of really any IoT, so Internet of Things related application, and to create a threat model for this application. You can really think of any area, whether this is the electricity grid, some aspect of a smart home, or related more to the medical sector, or even agriculture, or smart industry. You can also look at smart mobility, or various, really any device, such as even maybe an ATM. So really think of any IoT related application and carry out the different steps of threat modeling on this application. Now, if you don't have a specific application in mind, you can use this case study to practice. This is a smart washing machine, which has specific sensors and actuators. It connects to a backend over Wi-Fi. There is various cloud services, and also there is also access, the kind of services responsible for access control to those cloud services. There is a smartphone app with specific programs, either delivered by the manufacturer or possibly third parties. So whether it's this case study or something that you have defined yourself, some constraints are that your system involves an embedded system. That is pretty simple. For example, an ESP8266 or an ESP32 or any other simple ARM chip. Additionally, there should be some machine learning and cloud services involved. So here we see AI and cloud inside. So the idea is not to have that inside the small embedded system, but to have that be part of the backend. Now, as to the network architecture, here we have a reference architecture where we have a local area network, a home router, and the internet, various cloud services involving telemetry and also access control services, potentially also other services for streaming or even news. On this local network, there might be things like smart TVs, smart fridges connected over Wi-Fi. There might be various a gateway to connect to things like smart lights, smart locks, etc. So assume that this smart washing machine or any other case study that you're investigating, assume that that makes use of a similar network architecture. So a short reminder as to the different aspects to focus on for threat modeling. Think through, so create a data flow diagram of the system architecture of the data at rest, in motion, and in use. Think about the different trust zones, the different trust boundaries. Identify the crown jewels within the system, as well as the assumptions that you make around which interfaces an attacker has access to, and use stride or related approaches to think through all the different things that can go wrong, and think of whether they're single threats or combination of threats that can lead to specific attack scenarios, and think of which ones are easiest for an attacker to execute. And based on that, also look at various countermeasures that are possible, both to reduce the likelihood as well as to reduce the potential impacts. And throughout all of this, think about the assumptions that you make, and also record those around attackers, relevant processes, users, the environment, etc. Some tips around this, think about which parts of a system, so kind of make a general overview of the system, and ensure that that overview, kind of the level of detail, the resolution, that allows you to make certain risk-based decisions around what you want to focus on. So here we see a fire map, a fire insurance map from the 19th or beginning 20th century, which was used to get an idea of the material that different houses were made from, so that insurance premiums could be calculated. Now, the same idea can also be applied to this exercise. So think about the different elements that your system is made of, and think about which ones require most attention from a risk-based perspective. Sketch the data flow, the relevant entry points, relevant trust boundaries, as well as the assets or protected resources that you care about. As to threat modeling, of course, you can use Stride, but also to get some more concrete ideas, there's different approaches. One useful resource or one useful approach are so-called flaw hypothesis generators, an idea from the 1970s. And such flaw hypothesis generators are, for example, looking at things that have gone wrong in the past, so general system weaknesses, specific attack strategies that attackers have used, but also looking at kind of the interfaces that are exposed, thinking about, so in this case you might not, but depending on the case that you look at, if there is a user manual or developer documentation, if there are specific warnings on things not to do, that can be inspiration for ideas on things that could possibly go wrong. Right? So you can use use this list or other lists to get some idea of things that could possibly go wrong. And again, some other reminders, don't just think about things to prevent stuff from going wrong, but also look at, when looking at countermeasures, think about reactive barriers, think about ways of finding problems early on, and ways of responding to that, to those kind of two compromises quickly. And so really kind of combining these two things. Also remember that threat modeling is not a thing you do once. So you can so go through these different steps multiple times, so that you don't just create a diagram once, but kind of revisit the diagram once you have identified which parts of the system are most risky, then maybe zoom into specific elements and really see this as an iterative process. So look at this exercise. So of course you can do this on your own. You can also do this together with other people. It's also interesting to do it, to kind of compare the output of different teams working on the same exercise, or individuals or teams, and to look at the diagrams they come up with. So this is kind of a more in-depth exercise to really practice your threat modeling skills. If you want to then think of how that fits within a broader framework, you can also think of how you might then use that threat model to explore the relation, for example, with testing plans around, for example, code review, and really how this would be, how this threat model would drive or could drive many of the system engineering decisions that are made. So have a look at kind of who, or you could initially think about who could contribute to this threat model. If you are missing certain details, then just assume that for this exercise, but also kind of keep a list of who you might want to ask things or ask additional detail, with who you might want to check certain assumptions, and also how this threat model would be useful for getting an idea of how secure the system actually is, on guiding penetration testing planning, as well as directing code reviews. So this exercise is really meant as a way of kind of getting familiar and walking through the different parts, the different aspects of threat modeling, and to really integrate this into one whole. We've now arrived at the final part of this training, a collection of recommended homework exercises. Let's have a look at some recommended readings and associated exercises. We've seen the Threat Modeling Manifesto before in the context of the definition of system-centric threat modeling, but it also provides various other useful insights. For example, the section on patterns and anti-patterns, and you can use this to reflect on your own practice and even pick one or more specific patterns that you can use as a focus for further professional development. There's also this book from 2006, which provides a really interesting snapshot of Microsoft's approach to threat modeling. As a nice activity, you can reflect on the process described in this book in chapter 9 and compare and contrast this with the framework that we've discussed
during the training. And you can also think about which parts of the process you think are most relevant to your own situation. It can also be useful to look at the metrics that Microsoft describes that they used for evaluating their threat models, and whether and how they may or may not apply to your own threat models. Another interesting book is this one by one of the authors of the original 1999 white paper from Microsoft that describes Stride. This provides an interesting reflection on Microsoft's threat modeling process. And also, chapter 2 describes a lot of practical tips and realistic expectations around getting started and setting priorities. Again, take a look at how the threat modeling process described in this chapter, how this compares to the framework that we discussed during the training, and how it how both of these compare to the approach that your own team applies. For useful background information on common countermeasures, see this book by Van Oorschot. Now, when it comes to threat modeling, Van Oorschot uses a slightly different and slightly inconsistent terminology, and he has some divergent views on the utility of models of attackers and attack trees. But even so, section 1.5.1 and section 1.5.3, they give a really good summary of some of the key aspects that we've discussed during the training. And it also discusses how threat libraries or attack libraries can serve as a useful learning resource. Besides that, see section 1.6 for a really interesting discussion on the limitations of threat modeling. Now, as to exercises, have a look at the security design principles that Van Oorschot gives in section 1.7, or really any other list of security design principles, such as these information security practice principles from Jackson et al. And consider how such a list can be used for directing attention while threat modeling, and how it could guide a more general heuristic evaluation of a system security architecture. Taking an even broader view or broader perspective, here we see ISO 31000, which is a really useful source for understanding how threat modeling or architectural risk assessment fits into the broader framework of enterprise risk management. Key features of this framework are describes the cyclical nature of risk management, how risk management aligns with both business objectives and business activities, as well as the importance of assigning risk ownership. Now, for your own situation, it's interesting to consider how threat modeling relates on the one hand to scoping, as well as risk treatment decisions. And so have a look at, look back at some previous threat modeling sessions and consider whether it was clear going into this session what the major organizational risks were, and whether the selection of countermeasures as a result of this threat modeling session, whether those were based on the business impact, the expected business impact of attacks, and whether the countermeasures were weighed against other types of risk. And also think of whether someone actually took ownership of the prioritization, tracking, and also the validation of risk treatment. And finally, also consider whether any of your threat models have ever been revised. If so, what actually triggered this? Of course, understanding and reflection is important, but it is also vital to actually get started with threat modeling. So really just gather a diverse team and include both people with a technical as well as a business background, and pick any kind of existing system or components or a new product or feature that you're working on. Then grab a whiteboard and explore what could possibly go wrong and what you could do about it. And remember that when doing this, remember that all models are wrong, but that some models are useful. And threat models are useful if they drive changes within your system that lead to more secure products. Now, that was it for this training. Thank you for joining, and don't forget to have fun threat modeling.
Welcome back. I've got Arne with me here right now. So we can take a look at some of the questions. So first of all, do you have any recommended reading if I've just like seen your training, seen this talk, and I want to find out more, where do I start looking?
Yeah, so as discussed in the talk, there's of course the book by Kempfelder and the Tools and Jewels book by Van Oorschot. There's also some like more general security books that are very useful, because threat modeling is really it's just a kind of widely applicable technique, and so it's also good to have more of like a more some more background knowledge. And there's like the cybersecurity body of knowledge, for example, Ross Anderson's book. Google has a book as well on kind of more the distributed systems perspective. So there's really various resources. Also on my GitHub page, especially there's an overview of different threat modeling examples that are quite extensive. So if you want some inspiration there, that's also I think useful, including a list of blog posts / papers / blogs by in-house threat modelers who also share their experience. So I think this is also really useful to kind of reflect on, see like if you're exploring either introducing this in your own context or trying to kind of like revisit your current approach.
Would you recommend reading into the relevant ISO standard, or is that only something you should do if you're looking at threat modeling on organizational level?
Yeah, I think that would be more at an organizational level. I think so. So currently, there aren't that many kind of like standards specific to threat modeling, at least at an ISO level. There is one part of the IEC 62443 standards, which goes into, or at least one of the standards, which goes into threat modeling more for embedded systems.
What do you think in terms of like copying threat modeling from other people or other companies? Is that something that you can do if you adapt it, or should you always start from scratch and try to figure out your model yourself?
So I think so threat models are very kind of context specific, but you can draw some inspiration from existing threat models and also from existing threat modeling approaches, but really like what works for you in the end. And of course, for very people and organizations just starting out integrating security into the development process, it might even make sense not to, of course, threat modeling helps to get more of a design perspective, but it could also help to have to kind of combine that with some more kind of strict security guidance. So yeah, it really depends on the context.
Is there any research that has been done into threat modeling? Any like academic level looking into threat modeling?
So there's been some. Most of this research is of the kind of like yet another threat modeling method, basically. And that hasn't actually been evaluated. So there's been some work exploring how threat modeling is applied in practice, but there's a lot of work still to be done. And I think one highlight from last year was a team that basically took a group of students and had them think aloud while they were applying data for diagrams and strides to a kind of still somewhat make-believe system. But at least that showed a lot of the challenges that people have in having practice. So there's some work, but a lot still to be done.
After a security incident of sorts, should I revise my threat modeling, look into it, and see whether the threat that actually caused that incident was underestimated?
Yeah, so whether it was underestimated, but especially if it wasn't in your threat model, then also not just revisiting the threat model, adding that to the threat model, but also considering how could it have been that it wasn't picked up right during the threat modeling process.
So not just revising the threat model, but also reevaluating the process to see whether you've missed anything else.
Yeah, and the same, not just incident response, but also with pen testing. Like if your pen test breaks your threat model, so to say, then you have a problem.
I think that's it for our time slot today. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for your talk.
Yeah, thanks everyone for joining.